This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Season 2. I'm Arnold Furious, and with me is Ollie Court.
Hey there, Arnold.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. January was exciting. A new beginning.
Well, we did the Britties last time, so we basically haven't touched on anything that's happened in European wrestling in 2018, so we've got quite a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, this is going to be a big catch-up show, and it's also the start of our new conversational format. Because as Rob said in the previous episode, we were sort of getting a bit bogged down in matches we weren't too interested in or didn't have much to say. So now we're going to focus on the stuff that we have hot takes for fresh out of the oven. and hopefully that means we can hit on more stuff as well.
Yeah, that seems to be the way. Because we've got Rev Pro. We have three progress shows. I mean, normally that would take us like 2 hours because we'd go a match at a time. But we'll fly through it. And we've got Fight Club Pride to talk about, and WXW, and like loads. So we start with high stakes because we're both there.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a good logical place to start.
because that was sort of the first big show of the year. I think there was one progress chapter, but I'm not sure if it was a Camden one. So I don't know. I've still got in my mind that the Camden ones are still the most important. Even though that's not really the case, and we gave show of the year to a Manchester chapter in the Britties, but this one felt like, you know, everyone was there, so it was sort of a good way to kick off the year and kick off this show.
Yeah, it was like the third show that I went to this year. So the obvious match that we want to talk about is the main event. So that was the tag between incumbent RevPro British Tag Team Champions Mustache Mountain, hailing from the WWE, against Suzuki Gun, which was Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. from New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Where else in the world could you see this match?
RevPro seem to be the best at micromanaging that weird relationship between the New Japan guys and the WWE UK guys, because they just kind of bundle them all in. And it's also about a year since Yoshihashi versus Pete Dunne, which is my favourite match of that kind, just because of how strange it was. But this, very much in the same vein, and just the charisma explosion between these four guys.
I don't know how they get away with it. Like, who do they have to ring? They have to call someone up and go, oh, by the way, we're going to job Tyler Bate out to Minoru Suzuki. Is that cool? Like, who makes that call?
Yeah,
because no one else seems to be able to get away with doing anything, like even having the match in the first place, let alone having a title on one of them and it going to the other.
Yeah, the politics of Brit Wrestling 2018 is a bit of a minefield, and they've managed to navigate it fairly successfully, and it leads to awesome matches like this.
And it's a really great match too. Minoru Suzuki, we talked about this at the tail end of last year when he was over for Global Wars, but he really brought his work boots for these shows. And this might even be a better performance from him than back at Global Wars, when we thought he was great in that main event, but it kind of overshadowed by Ishii and Keith Lee. But like, his performance here, oh my God, it was so good.
Like, he owned the arena from like the moment he stepped in. And everyone got to play off that charisma really, really well. Like, him and Mustache Mountain had great chemistry, and him and Trent Seven especially, and like, they got that sort of comedic edge down. You know, Suzuki's no stranger to doing those sort of pseudo comedy matches, but also mixing in the violence at the same time. Like, that's one of the things he's best at, and Trent Seven the same. So they got to hit each other hard, but also sort of play up to each other.
I think my favourite sequences in this were between Suzuki and Tyler Bate, though, because the way that Suzuki treated him was, it was just great. Like, he just didn't give a shit. He was like taking spots off Tyler and just standing there and laughing in his face.
Yeah, because who's Tyler Bate to Minoru Suzuki?
Yeah, even
it's
though,
a different world.
Yeah, even though he is a big deal, he's been this big star. He's been on like a takeover, but to Minoru Suzuki, nah, he ain't shit. And he just treated him like nothing. It was brilliant.
And man, Zach got involved too in the same kind of way. Suzuki-gun Zach is just a treat to watch. And like we're sort of rumbling that maybe they'll bring in more Suzuki-gun guys and sort of make that a story throughout the year in RevPro that Suzuki-gun are taking over.
They don't really have any other good guys, though. I'd permit Desperado, but if they start bringing over, like, Kess, I just think they're going to over-egg that omelette. I think it's really special at the moment with Suzuki being the man.
And obviously, they won the tag titles here, got the pick of them holding all the belts. And they're really trying to make Sabre Jr. a big deal, holding two top titles in the promotion. This win sort of felt a bit like the Shibata win last year, with a Japanese guy coming in and winning the title, taking it back, and who knows, potentially defending it in New Japan. They're definitely playing up that kind of thing again. So Suzuki's definitely coming back, and they're going to try and make him a big deal going forward.
I was up on the balcony for this one. I was stood next to Brother Mort, who you know.
Yeah, pleasure to see him.
Yeah,
definitely.
Lovely guy. But he's, like, at the start of the match, he was talking about the politics of it and going, like how Andy Q must have had to have spoken to somebody in New Japan and going, like, yeah, Minoru Suzuki's coming over, but, like, him and Sabre are going to have to lose to these WWE guys. And how did he get away with having that conversation? And then when they actually won, he was like, he won! They won!
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise to me as well. I didn't think that they would. But it does kind of make sense that they put the titles on Mustache Mountain for them to lose it, and then they still have CCK in their back pocket, which they're going to be doing in May against the Suzuki-gun boys.
Yeah, it's a shame they don't have a show in between, because it felt like they got everything hyped up with this show and with the cockpits that they've run around it, and they still have another 3 months of waiting until we get that.
Because last year it was in April, that show, the Epic Encounter show. So yeah, it's a bit longer to wait, but they can heat it up in the spring. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But they do at least have a couple of big matches booked for that they can build towards.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited for RevPro this year.
Yeah, definitely. They certainly changed a little bit last year, as did all of BritRest, really. But their cockpit shows became a big deal, and, you know, it's something to look out for. I haven't actually seen any of their cockpit shows in 2018 yet, but I know they had that weekend, a lot of interesting matches booked for that. I'll definitely dive into that at some point. A lot of the Yoko shows, as we said on the last show, were built around the Bullet Club and silly bullshit like that. So let's hope they don't fall into that. Obviously, they probably made a fair bit of money on that, but it's not appealing to us particularly. So,
yeah, I think at the end of the day, Andy's booking for the cash.
Yeah.
He does book matches that he thinks are exciting, and I do appreciate that. And there was stuff on this card that was particularly good. I thought Adam Brooks versus Ryan Smile was really good.
Oh, I'm going to have big disagreement over that,
because really?
I thought it was absolute rubbish.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, because if it was like a 10-minute match, I would have enjoyed it more.
It probably was a little too long, but
they really over-egged the pudding, and stuff like Ryan Smite, like when he was getting put back into the ring, him going through like the middle rope rather than the bottom rope, I just thought he was trying to be Hiroshi Tanahashi and have like an epic... potentially because he knew that this may well be his final match, and he wanted to really go out and impress, and he just tried too hard for his position on the card.
Shit, I enjoyed it.
I don't want to kind of kick him too hard, even though, you know, the whole Lucha Brother thing is still up in the air. Yeah.
The crowd really actively disliked him.
In a different situation, I would have appreciated this match more, but on the third match on the card, when there's still, you know, the two bigger matches that the show was built around to come, to have a 20-minute match like this, you know, the paced epic, and with two guys like this, who one of whom you don't really know, and one of whom, you know, hasn't had the best of years recently in Ryan Smile. Like, I just thought they really over-egged it, and nothing appealed to me once I realised what they were going for.
Do you think the dislike of Ryan Smile is due to Lucha Forever and it collapsing?
I think a fair bit of that, like, they really screwed it up with Lucha Forever. He screwed up a lot on Twitter. There was that whole, you know, him and Alex Windsor fiasco. And unlike Ospreay, he's not, like, the generational talent to be able to get over that kind of thing. Like, with Ospreay, we can sort of just put it into the back of our minds and excuse it a bit, whereas with Smile, it's a bit like that's who he is, because his in-ring work can't speak for itself in that regard. I don't know if that's me being horrible, but...
No, I think the timing of this was a shame, because that match, I think, could have done better if it was in front of a different crowd at a different time.
Definitely.
But like, I really enjoyed it anyway. I think in a vacuum, it's going to look better. I think we need to talk about the some of the title changes they've been doing as well. They brought the women's title in.
Yeah.
And I think Ginny is your ideal champion here. They basically booked everything around her, so yeah. It would have been weird if she hadn't have won.
I do think they did a really good job with Ginny last year, because every cockpit show had a match with her on it, and she won every single match. You know, challenger stepped. She was basically the champion before they had her belt.
Yeah,
and the bringing the belt just kind of confirms it. So I thought, you know, they built it very slowly. It was just a single match on the show, but Ginny was the focus from the very start, and now they have a situation where she feels like a big deal, and whoever beats her it'll feel like a really significant moment. So they've done a good job with that one.
I don't think they've done a particularly good job of building a division, though, because you've got the setup here was like, they've got Bea Priestley in because of Ospreay, and then you've got Millie McKenzie because she got screwed in the tournament. But like, Millie was made by Fight for Pro. It wasn't something that Red Pro have done. They've focused all their booking on Ginny.
Mm.
So it's a case of like, where do you go from there?
Well, again, like, the cockpit seems like a good vehicle to build it up now. They built up Ginny throughout the year, so she feels like a big deal. Now they can focus on everyone underneath her.
It definitely needs work.
Oh, yeah, certainly. But I think pretty much all women's divisions in Britress right now need work. But the fact that they are building it up and giving the attention at least to the champion is a solid foundation.
Oh, that's fair enough. Also, the other big title switch was the Cruiserweight title. And I was extremely happy for Curtis Chapman. This was at the end of last year. This was at the Bullet Club show, whatever it was called. I'm actually looking it up. So can't remember. It's Uprising, that's right.
I literally cannot remember anything about Uprising. I didn't watch it. It's like it never even happened. Like, I was too busy to like even give it a glancing thought. It just had no bearing on anything other than Young Bucks and Cody playing or being... and Marty Scurll being the Bullet Club and everyone fawning over that. If that's your lifestyle choice, then I'll let you get on with it.
But my only take home from that show was that Curtis Chapman won the Cruiserweight title. I was really quite happy.
That's really the only significant thing that happened. But again, it's a guy who they built up pretty consistently and slowly throughout the year on the cockpit shows, to the point where they can have a match like this against Rob Lias and have it feel like it belongs. Like, if they'd put these two on a year ago, it wouldn't have felt like anything, but they built those guys up to an extent where you can put them on the first match on the card, you can have Chapman be the champion of the division, even if he is there by banana peel, and it feels important, and it has a place on the show.
I think they had a bit of an issue here where they put Chapman and Lias together, because they've done a good job of building them both up, but there's still a large amount of fans that go to those York Hall shows that don't watch the cockpit shows.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Wouldn't have known
who
they were.
It's a different kettle of fish.
I think there was a good reaction for him when he came out, but then the way the match was put together, it wasn't particularly good, and I think that might have hurt him by coming out there and not having an opponent that...
That title, his title reign really needs a big defense against a big name challenger to really feel important.
He had like a three-way with Brooks and Webster, I think it was, on one of the cockpit shows. But he needs a big singles defense.
Yeah, definitely.
He doesn't necessarily have to win it even, but like he needs that big singles challenge just so he can put out a good match so people remember this run.
His finisher got over, though, the Mega Drive.
Yeah.
That looked absolutely killer. And maybe that's why they picked Elias, because they knew that they'd been practicing it down in Portsmouth or whatever and knew they could make it look amazing.
I suppose that's fair. But yeah, that match didn't really... do too well.
What did you think of Aussie Open versus the LIJ boys?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah, it was kind of just coasting on Evil and Sonata's charisma and kind of prove that they have that star power to be at the top level of New Japan. It wasn't an amazing match or anything, but people got behind Aussie Open. They do have a really good groundswell of support in Britress now, and they recognised it was a big opportunity for them, so... It was a cool, fun match. Yeah, not going to set the world on fire, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where I don't really remember what happened. It was there. I preferred Ospreay and Andrews.
Second
last, really good sprint.
Yeah, it was only like 7 minutes, but yeah, they just threw everything out there. Like everything they knew they could do and all the crazy groundbreaking shit that they can do. Just chucked it all on the plate. And served it up. And I'm kind of just like, when you look at that versus Smile versus Brooks, which went 20 minutes and didn't say very much, this only went 7 and they packed so much stuff in.
Cage match says 9:42.
Oh, okay. But yeah, less than 10 minutes is very surprising
for
those two.
It felt like 5 though. It was just so fast paced.
Yeah.
It was a little bit too spotty, but then I think I can let Will off because he's had such an incredible January. We'll get around to that in a bit. We also have progress shows to talk about.
Lots of progress shows. They've been very busy.
Two chapter shows, but they also have had these midweek shows at the Dome. So my first show of the year was the Dome show on the 10th. Because the last time I went to the Dome, I've been there twice. I went there for WXW twice last year.
Yeah.
And I just love that venue. It's a great venue. So I thought, I'm off work that week, midweek show, I'll go and check it out. And it was a really good show. There was nothing completely blow away in the ring. It's like, I wouldn't say, oh, go and watch this show on there on demand or anything. But it's the combination of like that small venue and that company putting all that in that small venue. I really enjoyed it.
I've never been there, but they seem to have found a better formula for their B shows,
because
they were doing that reality TV show thing for a while, which was just a bit bizarre.
Well, they had that, and they had Endeavor before that.
And Endeavor, but Endeavor never felt important. Like, that did feel just like a trainee show. I think this is a better balance where, you know, they haven't got any, like, B-show, you know, WCW Thunder branding
it's
on
that,
it.
That ICW show when they run the garage, they have, like, the smaller crowd, the more intense crowd. And, it really worked well. Talents that kind of passed their auditions, as it were. I thought Kip Sabian on that show was really good. Got the crowd into the match. Crowd got into all of his shtick. And I thought he looked terrific. He really isn't established anywhere because he was like a big guy for Lucha Forever. And kind of.
Well, that went tits up.
Yeah. So he kind of lost his big gig there.
Yeah.
But based on this performance, I think he'll be in progress very soon. Also, I thought it was a good turning. A good display from Saxton Huxley, Muscle Cat, and Gabriel Kidd. Really good tag team. I'm a massive Muscle Cat fan.
Was Danny Jones on this show? I don't remember.
He was on...
Oh, was he on the previous one? And he was against one. Mike Bird, yeah.
Mike Bird. That was really great, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, because I want to see how he does this year. He's certainly one to watch, you know. After his All Japan excursion last year, I got to see a bit of him there. And I know, you know, he's a big deal for Dragon Pro in Wales, but I have never seen any of that. So it'd be interesting to see if he gets more regular work in progress and other places that a bit more high profile so that more people can see him and we'll see just how good he is.
Yeah, he definitely looked good when he was on one of the chapter shows, 62.
Yeah, it was the tag team match, yeah.
Tagging with Mark Andrews. But I think it looked good, though. Looked solid. I think we've been kind of talking around it, but there was this massive, like, sex abuse scandal in January, and one of the best things about that Dome show was the end of Strangler Davis.
Yeah, he got taken off that show.
Completely removed, not spoken of.
The night of, yeah, and disappeared. So yeah, that is definitely a good thing. Like, it's good to see some actual action done rather than just words, because a lot of time, you know, you see people talking about it on Twitter, but then, you know, what's going on behind closed doors is another thing altogether. So that's like a definitive thing you can hang your hat on. There's still a lot more to do, very clearly, very evidently, but, you know, that is something you can point to and say something was done about it.
Yeah, it was needed to be done. You couldn't just have him on the show. I was mentally planning what I would do if he was there. Like, I was considering just turning my back on the ring. I'd spoke to some people beforehand who said they would just go outside while his match was on. So there was a clear... we don't want to see him in any capacity.
And definitely.
I'm glad they listened. I got to have a chat with Glenn Joseph after the show, because he's like the only one of the three Progress boys I'd never met. But I was sat in the pub next door afterwards, and he just kind of came in and sat on the same table. He just happened to be directly opposite me, so I struck up a conversation. And the only thing that I'm going to mention is that I said I'd had a chat with John Briley like the previous year, and that I thought he was a nice lad. And Glenn just looked at me and went, "Are you sure you spoke to John Briley?" So that made me laugh. That and another highlight from that show was when Amir Jordan came out, I took the opportunity to nip to the toilet because he's got a very long entrance. And on my way past the merch area, Chikara and Candy Floss were dancing to his music. Very funny little double take I pulled off there. But,
yeah, sounds like you know, it's got a good atmosphere, these Dome shows, and it sort of washed away the stink of B Show about it, I guess, which Freedom's Road kind of had a bit of, and you could only really get into if you're an absolute diehard. Yeah. This is a bit more accessible and a bit like I like the midweek thing as well.
Yeah,
so
definitely. This is something I'd recommend going to see live. I don't think it's going to translate as well. On the VOD, just midweek show. If you're around, go and check it out.
Yeah, awesome. Should we talk about the chapter shows as well? Because they've been very busy. Obviously, I don't. Were you there for chapter 63 or
60? Like, which one was 63? No, like, that's wrong.
Yesterday.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so we have two chapter shows to talk about: 61 and 62. And
I was at 61. I was at
probably
work.
Shouldn't.
I was at work for 62.
probably shouldn't bury the lead and just go out and say it, but Walter versus Tim Thatcher. It's a fairly good way to start off the year. It's in my top 10. I only have 10 matches rated 4 stars and above, and so far this year, and this is one of them. What a very good way to start off the year.
Yeah, Ian, who was there, told me that he'd gone like full boat on it, that he'd gone 5 stars, and I was I was like, what? but then I watched it and I was like, wow, I can see how he might think that. That is incredible match, so intense. Tim Thatcher in this, oh my god.
Yeah, he, like, I have been very critical of Tim Thatcher in the past, and he's still kind of hot and cold for me, but he was really on it this one. I think sometimes he might oversell a bit. Like, I remember when he was first in Progress against Jack Gallagher, And he was like selling his knee, like it got shot off, and I thought it was a bit, it's a bit much for like 5 minutes into a match and just a bit of technical stuff. But when you're dealing with such the force and the violence that this match contained, that kind of, you know, playing to the back row stuff works, because when you do get chopped in the head by Walter,
chopped in the face,
it's gonna look like it hurts, so you better sell it like it hurts. And yeah, it was a really good spirited fight by Thatcher just against the relentless viciousness of Walter, and I thought that was just a really good good through fair for this match to deal with, and the way those two related to each other. Obviously they know each other really well and have probably planned out a match like this for a while, but just the execution of it was so perfect.
Yes, outstanding stuff in this match. It was so hard hitting. Like, if that hard hitting style, if that's your thing, we've got a match for you.
Yeah, and yeah, it really, I think it raised the profile of the Atlas title.
Oh, Walter's been doing that since he's picked it up.
Yeah, because previously it has been like a fun belt for like Matt Riddle owned that title and made it feel really important, but it always felt a bit like a sideshow. And kind of the same for Walter. Like, he'd have the Walter match, and it was really cool. But I think main eventing with it almost makes the Atlas title feel like the most important title in progress right now. And it's certainly the one I'm the most invested in, because who the hell is going to wrestle it off of Walter when he chops his best friend in the face and boots him on the ground?
It has caused an interesting problem where, like, which is the more important title? Is it going to be, like, Walter's Atlas title or Travis Banks's?
Because I was going to move on to say that the whole CCK power trip fallout stuff that has felt a bit like kids playing at the kids table compared to, you know, the big boy wrestling in the main event. I don't know how that's come across for you, but
the Atlas
kind
title
of
has always been like a very difficult title for them to book, because they have to do it as secondary to their main, but at the same time it's just been difficult to find guys that could fit the bill. Even for the tournament in the first place, it just the wheels fell off that thing before they even got near the finish. And they eventually got the right guy in Rampage, then took it off him, and he disappeared. And then, like you say, Riddle had it as a trophy belt.
Which I did really enjoy, but it always felt a bit like a sideshow.
I don't know, it kind of like took away from what the division was.
Walter's the perfect guy to have it.
Absolutely.
And this was easily the best match they've had in that division. The only other one that I think comes near it is that Rampage versus Coffee draw they had in the tournament.
Yeah, it was really good. To be honest, all the Walter Riddle matches I thought were great.
Oh, yeah. I forgot better. About them. Yeah. So it has had a good history so far. But yeah, this match, clearly like the jewel in the crown for the Atlas right now. But I do worry about that main event picture they've got going on right now, because there's no clear person to root for. And I get they're kind of going for shades of grey, like who's on whose side. But it comes across as a bit petty. Like, and there's just nothing to really sink your teeth into. Like with Walter Thatcher, you get it immediately. Whereas this is a bit, I'm kind of scratching my head and sort of wandering off to do something else while these matches are on. And, you know, a wrestler of the caliber of Travis Banks should be hooking me more than that.
I think the problem that they've got here is that TK Cooper has been out injured for, 9 months?
Yeah.
He was out for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then he came back and, like, his second match was the title shot at 62. And he did look a bit rusty in that match, so it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it's a shame, because Cooper was riding so high when he got the injury, and also the Dahlia Black injury, which kind of hurt the act. And it is a shame that we never got just months and months of awesome power couple / power trip stuff. And it's going to take a while to build that back up again, and he doesn't slot straight back in into this story very well, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a shame they've made it so confrontational right from the get-go, when surely there was a lot of sympathy for TK. It's making it hard to root for Travis. It has caused issues. There's no doubt about that.
And also kind of in the background, you have Eddie Dennis, who is the most compelling character they've got right now, but he's injured, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's out until July.
That's a that's an absolute killer, because his story is so interesting and his character is so interesting, because it uses the history of progress almost against progress itself.
Yeah.
I really like that, that a character sort of broken out.
There is one good thing about it, and that's that now he's going to get the chance to talk for months.
Yeah.
Whereas,
and he's really good at talking,
yeah.
especially in this character.
And that's the thing. Like, do you remember when Steve Austin first rose to prominence? And it was mainly because he couldn't do any wrestling because his neck was broken. So they just had him interacting with authority figures.
Yeah.
This is the perfect opportunity to do something very similar with Eddie Dennis.
Maybe and not like build. They have the opportunity to build that to that Andrews match, and they can do that at Wembley. You know, that it doesn't necessarily have to main event, but that could be a huge grudge match to build up to.
Yeah, with, you know, virtually no contact until then.
Yeah. So it's a great shame for their main event scene, because they can't use Dennis in the way they wanted to, but if, you know, a bit of foresight looking into the future, they can build something big with this, because the character is on fire right now, really compelling. As someone who isn't enjoying much of the progress storylines right now, this is really up my alley, and I'm very much invested in it. So if they can build to a big time match on a big show like the Wembley one, which they have in their back pocket, you know, that's definitely something I can get into.
Yeah, they've had some definite misfortune with the timing of injuries, but the TK Cooper injury coming when it did. Their tag division has gone tits because of Kid Lykos being injured, so they ended up with like a heel match for the titles, because that was where the titles were supposed to be going, but they had no other way to get them there. So it's almost like an accidental thing where Gibson and Drake had the belts, and it was like, well, why have they got the belts? Because we had to put them on someone. So that's just how it turned out.
Yeah, it's a shame what they're doing with the Havoc, Haskins and Haskins trio as well, because I was really into that act coming out of the big September show in Alexandra Palace, and they just haven't explained who they are and what they're doing. I get they're maybe going for the mystery angle, but I think we saw 2 years ago they're not very good at the mystery angle with the whole who is William Eva, what's his secret. Give me at least, you can have a secret in your back pocket, but just give me at least a reason for them wrestling rather than just they are wrestlers.
Well, they have got something strange going on with Vicky as well, because they've got her involved with Flash Morgan Webster.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's kind of scratching the surface of something else that they're doing there. And I did like throughout Chapter 62, though, they were leaving me asking a lot of questions and going like, well, where are we going with this? Which, I don't know, it makes me want to come back and see what happens.
It's good that, you know, they're keeping you interested. I just wish there was a baseline to that group and that character. Like, what is their actual motivation? I do want to see where they go, and I like the act. I like the Vicky Haskins holding the barbed wire baseball bat. I think it looks cool, but what's the motivation?
Did they ever explain why they turned? If they did, I missed it.
Well, the thing is, I really enjoyed their match in Alexandra Palace, and like that act that Mark and Vicky Haskins were doing together in that match, it made sense for them to team up, but it's just been way too long since then to still have no explanation as to why they're teaming together. It's an odd one, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
So anything else? I feel like it's been a while. It's almost a month now since that match, but the parachuted in Pete Dunne versus Joe Connors match, which happened.
Oh yeah, that was 61.
Yeah. Joe Connors, the amazing wrestler who hasn't been seen since that one, unless he turned up on 63. I haven't actually.
No, I don't know what happened on 63. But
yeah, that was a very strange run. To be fair, the match was okay,
yeah.
But again, it's Joe Connors.
See, you know, I had a conversation with you before High Stakes saying that I wasn't going to bother reviewing that match because I couldn't find a way to make it interesting. But if I'd have been paying more attention live, which I wasn't, I was chatting to people, but if I had paid more attention live, that was actually quite good. But
I mean, they worked very hard, but it felt like a match that could have just taken place anywhere in the entire universe, and it just didn't fit in to the show that they were putting on there.
And you see how hard the characters Connors was trying to get over that crowd.
He was jumping all over the OT.
I appreciate them doing that as well, trying to make him different to appeal to the different crowd. Because a lot of the problems he's had is that he's come in as just boring old Joe Connors doing rest holds and stalling, which works fine in some companies, but it doesn't work in progress. That's not what the fans buy into. That's not what they boo. So they had him different in that match with Pete Dunne. He was putting the work in, but he was also like bantering with the fans, which is more along the lines of what heels in progress behave like.
So it's a little bit too little too late. And it, as I say, that match just had no context in anything, that UK title. I get what there was a bit of chat, I can't remember who posed the question, but it kind of is the most useless belt in all of wrestling because it doesn't really stand for anything, and the matches just get put on and then shuffle off.
It's not changing hands, so why bother with it at all? Why?
Vanity.
I don't know. I think they should probably just chuck it in the sea and forget about it. They're going to take Pete Dunne over anyway, aren't they?
Mm.
It's only a matter of time before he's living in Florida. I mean, fair play to him. He really does get the business. She is one of the best wrestlers at understanding wrestling and what it's supposed to be about.
I wish they would pull the trigger on that, though, rather than keeping us in Pete Dunne limbo for over a year.
I guess there's a plan. Maybe there isn't.
I feel like there isn't a plan. It will happen when it happens.
Yeah, you get the feeling like he's going to be there eventually, and that's just a prop that he happens to have until that such time.
So yeah, it's a strange one to sort of wrap your head around, I guess.
It's one of them WWE things where they've done something specifically for a reason, but now the reason is gone and they're left with a title. And it's like, what do we do with this?
they do love doing that.
if Five Stars start getting a little bit of traction, which they won't, because... but if they do, then you might see some more UK specials and stuff happening.
Mm.
It's more likely if there's some reason for doing it in the first place.
Do I sense a segue towards Five Star Chat?
You talk about Five Star, I really don't have anything to say.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not going to watch any more of their shows. I was only in it for that first one, which was, 2.5 years in the making, really. You know, finally they were going to go off on this UK-wide arena tour that would take half a year. I don't even know if there are that many arenas in the UK.
Are they still doing the 400-man tournament, or have they given up on that?
I think they stopped the 128-man tournament, but there was a mini-tournament for the tag titles, their new tag titles, but that was only a four-team tournament. So the 128-man tournament never happened. They went down from 128 to 4. Or 8, I guess, if you want to be pedantic about how many people are in a tag team. But, it was such a bizarre show. It was like watching a budget Raw, and... I don't even know how anyone makes it through 3 hours of Raw every week, let alone... And this was the production was fine, apart from the audience being literally completely pitch black because there was no one there. I think about 600 or something reported from inside the venue, which holds 11,000 people.
600 is not a bad number for a company that has no history.
Yeah, but I think, again, they were papering that quite heavily as well. I know Benno from my other podcast got in for free. So I don't know how much of that was paid. And yeah, it just looked a bit tragic and whenever the camera sort of accidentally panned.
Do you kind of get the feeling that we might have got invited if we hadn't slagged them off so much?
Yeah, but they deserved getting slagged off because they cancelled their tour because they blamed the Manchester terror attacks, which is, pretty lowest of the low behaviour. And yeah, there was pretty much nothing of note on this show. at least to like really sink your teeth into, other than Zach Gibson, who just cut a promo basically slagging off Five Star and, you know, focusing on imports only. And I don't think he never said anything about the number in attendance. I think that was maybe the only thing he wasn't allowed to get into, but he pretty much got into everything else, like the amateur production and focus on Yanks. And yeah, that was such an interesting promo. Master of a mic, really. And yeah, the show kind of got booked around him in a way. Like, he got established as the next challenger to Johnny fucking Nitro, of all people.
Johnny Five Star.
Johnny Five Star. But yeah, this was a really good thing to put on his CV for WWE in the future. Yeah. And if the show is just a vehicle for Zach Gibson, then fair play. But I don't think anybody watched it this week. And even fewer people, negative numbers of people will watch it this coming week. So
it's just the fact that it's weekly and it's 3 hours.
It's just bizarre. It's just,
why would you do that?
And you're still booking it around Americans who aren't going to be here in a few weeks' time. I don't even know what that living situation is like for the guys who are on the show. I don't really know what's going on with that. Do they have Rey Mysterio for the entire tour? It's just very bizarre. But as a one-off thing to slag off on Twitter, it was a good time.
I watched something else. I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah, Zach Gibson was gone,
wasn't
it?
Seagal straight to video movie, which was dreadful.
Wow. That probably would be a better time than Five Star. And also, PJ Black looked very haggard. Looked like he'd been living in a bin for about 2 years. Like Yoshitatsu living in a bin. That's what he looked like.
Yoshitatsu's good name.
He is. It's incredible. Completely off topic, but yeah, like Dominion 2016, Michael Elgin defeating Kenny Omega in the ladder match with help from Ricochet, Matt Sydal, and Yoshitatsu. Who would have thought that out of all those guys, Yoshitatsu would be the big indie fave?
It's a ridiculous state of affairs, to be honest. This is drifting into post-podcast chatter.
We should be charging for this kind of
talk. Always end up talking about something ridiculous like Yoshitatsu.
Let's get back on track. Do you want to talk Fight Club Pro or WXW?
Yes, let's talk Fight Club Pro.
Yes.
So, I'm aware that what they have there now is not what we fell in love with in the first place. Because we really, really fell in love with that Fight Club Pro. The fiction, like the whole atmosphere that they had
definitely
there.
That run from about July, August to January.
The start of Travis's loss streak of defeats. That match with Sabre Jr., like from that.
That was the very first match they put on Vimeo as well.
Yeah, from there
versus Sabre Jr.
Like him winning the title. That run was brilliant.
Yeah. So many great matches. And they're still having great matches, but yeah, it definitely isn't quite the same thing.
It
feels
that,
very different.
That show thinking, like, I kind of wish some of the trainees were getting on the shows. And I would like, because
where's Johnny T? All these years later.
Simpson, where is he? You had like El Fantasma against Adam Brooks, and no, like, I don't have an issue with either of them. They're both perfectly good professional wrestlers. One of them's Canadian, one of them's Australian. And did they really add any ticket sales to that show? No offense to either guy, like them both, but how's about giving some of the kids a chance? Because when they do give the kids a chance, look at what happens. Amari was in by far the best match on the card against Keith Lee. And him versus imports has always been intriguing to me because he has a completely different dynamic to him than somebody like Travis Banks, who's always been an underdog but fights hard. It's like Amari's already big and he just has a different way of doing stuff. And they've got a nice little three-match plan there with Keith Lee, with them being 1-1 after two matches. And the other thing that I really like about Fight Club Pro is the way they've booked Millie McKenzie.
Yeah.
And that came to a head on this show because she was up in the main event, got down to her and Brooks in an elimination match, and it's like, she could actually beat the champion here, thus earning herself a title shot, and in comes Ginny to screw her over. And the whole reasoning behind that is, it's, if you look at it from a cross-promotional point of view, Millie McKenzie is like a Johnny come lately to the all the scenes that Ginny wrestles in. She's coming to Rev Pro, she's coming to Progress, and she's featured in high profile matches there. And Ginny's gone like, well, two can play that game. I'm going to go to Fight Club Pro in their dingy little warehouse in Wolverhampton and show her how it's done. That's a great storyline.
I've never thought of it like that before, but yeah, that is really awesome. And as you say, the Fight Club Pro booking, like the real strength of it has been that focus on the three young House Fight Club guys and girls, Omari, Millie McKenzie, and Kyle Fletcher. And they really feel like the focus of the shows they put on. Like, they still have all these veterans. They have Mark Haskins and Devlin and Brooks as the champion. We'll get to that in a minute. But they have all these, you know, big-name guys. But the focus of the show is, like, the real center of the emotional stuff that they're doing. But, yeah, the emotional core of the shows are those three. And they're all really thriving in that environment. And also, you know, Mark Davis isn't one of those young guys, but by extension, he's fit in there as well.
You got like Drew Parker as well, who they're kind of bringing him on as like a deathmatch daredevil
definitely
guy.
I mean,
that was
the highlight
the one
of their
thing
year
on
really
this show
was,
that I thought was kind of weird, because they had it as like an attack co-promoted show. But he didn't feel like an attack co-promoted show.
Yeah,
one last
it was just
year,
an excuse to have silly stuff in the first match.
Yeah, and that was about it. But because of that, they had Drew Parker in that as part of like what he is in attack, which is a very strong heel.
Yeah.
So he couldn't be the same guy. So that was weird to me. Like, they did a crossover and he's the only one that doesn't slot in because he's two different guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't feel like as strong a crossover as it was last year. You were at that show last year, and
last year,
as you know,
was
it was a very weird one.
That was a very, very fun time.
Yeah, I thought the show was all right, but I can't shake the feeling it was booked about like 15 minutes before showtime, with all the guys gathered in the back and going, okay, we'll get all our shit in and then get eliminated or whatever, and. It felt that kind of
you're getting very
slapped
cynical,
together. I think Fight Club Pro is a great live thing. It doesn't come across quite as well when I'm in my pajamas in the living room watching it on my own. It's something that you need armed with a dark fruit cider. Other good ciders are available.
I don't think they are
in your hand. You know. Your mates all around you, you need that atmosphere, you need that environment of craziness to sort of get it, I think. And it is a really cool time when you are there, and I can attest that Death House match was pretty visceral and just an incredible live environment. But yeah, looking at it sort of from afar, it was kind of a weird show to watch, apart from Keith Lee Omari, which was great however you slice it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I do prefer going to those shows live. And I think, like, Fight Club Pro is the only promotion that I didn't follow for a long time on VOD before I went to see it. I saw, like, one show and was like, ah, I gotta see that. And then I went.
Yeah. It has got a really good live environment. Probably the best in all of Britrest, really. And the sort of trips to Wolverhampton are semi-legendary at this point. It's always a good time to go. I'm not sure if the product comes across as well on VOD, bare bones as it is, without really like a commentary team or presentation or anything.
I think it lacks some of the intensity that it used to have as well. It used to be you went to Fight Club Pro and at least one match, usually half of the matches on the card, would be really intense.
Yeah.
And El Fantasma versus Adam Brooks. Sorry to keep banging on about them, but it's just like, what was that? I know it's like one of these. But they had like this attack crossover show, and like, where are the attack guys?
Mm. I didn't really get that whole attack crossover, apart from, as I say, the silliness in the first match with all the gimmick guys. It maybe didn't mesh quite as well. Do you have any thoughts on this show, or should we talk about how they're going to the NEC for DTTI?
Oh, that's very exciting.
Yeah, that is a big deal for them, because obviously last year's DTTI, their big show was in the Diamond Banqueting Suite. We know very well. But it looks like it had one successful night in the 80s and never again.
It looks like a set from a Bond film, like Moonraker or something.
It really is a sight to behold, and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks versus British Strong Style, with another kind of New Japan versus WWE UK style match, and that show ended like 12:30 or whatever.
Yeah. Two intermissions, and one was delayed because Pentagon couldn't find his makeup or something.
That was bizarre.
I'm sad they didn't go back there, but at the same time, that's the Starworks Warehouse is a great building for wrestling. It's huge. There's so much going on. It's like food in there and everything.
It does feel a bit like the Fiction, but just 3 times bigger. So in that sense, they got a good venue. But this, they're going for the NEC for their big show in the DTTI. And if you don't know, that's... is it an arena? It's sort of just like a big convention center outside Birmingham.
It's a very big building.
Yeah, like I've been in there, and you have to like use airport travelators to get around. But like it's sort of like a series of conference rooms rather than like one giant arena thing.
Yeah, it's a big step. It's a very big step.
Like, I'm guessing depending on the amount of tickets they sell will depend on how big the building is that they actually run. But they have a chance to sell a lot of tickets there, and they're bringing in some big names, including Meiko Satomura.
Yeah, I saw Meiko, because basically it's over Easter weekend, so the chances of me being able to get to it are very slim. But I'm tempted to buy a ticket anyway, just for that Sunday, because I will probably be able to get to that.
Awesome.
If I get a lift or something. Easter Sunday, there'll be public transport. Shit.
And yeah, the DTTI, they're really trying to establish that as a big tentpole weekend in the BritRest calendar. And if their ambitions can be matched by strong ticket sales, then it has a very strong chance of being one of the bigger shows of the year, maybe even the biggest, apart from Progress Wembley, depending on how well that does.
Well, they could get 10,000 in there. Well, they won't, but that's the size of building that we're talking about.
So we're talking big numbers here compared to the 200 people in the Fiction.
And yeah, it's quite a steep increase. I mean, the Starworks, they regularly have like 700 people in there.
Yeah. But that is... it's about ballroom sized, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Only there's less like obstructions to the viewers. Yeah. That's always an issue in the electric ballroom because those pillars are there.
Yeah, but you can lean on them. But yeah, you can't watch the match from the bar, which is unfortunate.
You can in Fight Club Pro, because I watched the Infinity Final leaning on the bar talking to Callum Leslie. we got a bit off topic though. We need to talk about WXW.
Yes, and
let's do that.
Obviously, everything's building towards 16 Carat, which is actually only a couple of weeks away. The next episode will probably preview it.
Well, we're recording this like 30 days before it ends.
Yeah. Don't be so negative.
No, it just happens to be the 12th that we're recording on, so that's when it finishes.
But yeah, their big show in January was Back to the Roots, which is their Kaffig-Schlacht show. Basically War Games. And with the whole Rise stuff going on, which I think has been really compelling, and they've been doing some good... when I've been checking it out, Shotgun has been really good recently. They just changed like the format of it, so they tape it all in a couple of days for the month, which I think will definitely help them out a bit.
They have specifically advertised stuff as Shotgun tapings as well, whereas before they'd just pick random matches off shows, and it was like, why have you used this one?
Yeah, some of the matches could just be like, I couldn't give a fuck about this. Whereas now, every match, it feels
Chris
significant.
Coleman
even if
versus Kim Ray.
Yay. And it also means they can use people like Toni Storm a lot more and keep her relevant throughout the month rather than just building her up before a big show. So that's definitely a positive move for them. And the Rise stuff they've been doing on that, it's been quite emotional. Because in the Catholic Schlacht, Blacky Kid hit Tarkan Aslan in the head with a chair. And they've sort of been doing a concussion retirement angle with Aslan, moving him out of a wrestling role into a management role, which is good. I think, as we've discussed earlier, I think that's where he suits best, managing for Lucky Kid rather than as a tag team. And also just all the dramas that have been unfolding in that group. You know, they're very in touch with their emotions. Yeah, and you feel sorry for them. They're the most sympathetic henchmen I've ever seen in wrestling.
Like, and if something goes wrong, we should just blame Pete Banzer for it.
Yeah.
It's like, like, I'll just, so there's a few audio snafus this week. It's that fucking Pete Banzer's fault.
And then Ivan Kiev gets sad because he's established friends with Pete Banzer. And then he gets on Bad Bones' case and makes a mean face. It's very emotional. They've got me invested in that, definitely. Like, because we early on in the Rise run, we were worried that it was just kind of a bunch of goons and they weren't particularly interesting. They've done an excellent job with segments over time, building up who likes who doesn't like who in that faction. And it's all coming to a head and it's all blowing up in Bad Bones' face because he can't keep everyone happy at the same time.
Yeah. It is an interesting situation. I was, like you said, concerned when they started doing Rise, because I don't like these big stables, because it ends with lots of bullshitty finishes.
Oh, yeah. And there were a lot of bullshitty finishes.
But they did a good job with the turns, especially Bad Bones when he first turned. I thought that was superb.
Yeah.
And Damac. Sorry, I was having a drink of water.
And their big tag matches, the 4-on-4 against Cerberus at Tag League, and then this 4-on-4 in the Catholic Schlacht, have been really good as well. And just the intricate planning of how the match goes has been really interesting. As you say, blame Pete Banzer for everything. Like, the match in the Catholic Schlacht turned on a dime when Banzer hit Bones in the head with the cage door, and just suddenly everything changed and it all went wrong for Rise. And yeah, I thought they really got that kind of Dragon Gate style, one thing goes wrong and then everything goes wrong for the team, but messed up thing down really well in that match and made it flow really well. And it also set up, because Walter made a Bad Bones tap out, it set up a 16 carat championship match, which would be Bad Bones versus
Walter.
I was so
upset about that. So, like, what do you mean? What, Walter's not in 16 Garrett? What? I was horrified.
Not in it this time.
Horrified.
I don't know. It's good to mix it up occasionally.
Yeah.
He played Final Boss last year, so this time he gets to fight the Final Boss.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting match. They've done a lot of good stuff in terms of building feuds up. The way they've worked on Jørn Simmons' character since that whole massive product thing fell apart.
Yeah, and that kendo stick stuff has been fascinating, because I watched his match with Alexander James, which ended with the kendo stick decapitation, and that really cheered me up at a time when I wasn't feeling very happy. And so now it's being used against me as like a heel thing. It's like a spit in the face. That's a really good
toying with your
turnaround.
Emotions.
Yeah.
I did like the way he specifically beat the shit out of Dirty Dragon as well, because everyone knows that they're friends.
Yeah.
So I came across really well.
They're doing a really good job with the male soap opera stuff. Better than any other promotion, I think.
So I was kind of hyped for the Absolute Andy Mario Salani feud and how it would probably come to a head around 16 carat, but Andy's struggling to stay heel.
Yeah, I did think that he was sort of leaning into the positive reactions too much with the crowd against Bobby Guns when he
so
should have just been
charismatic, though. It's just it's hard for him not to do that. And then you've got Marius, who, I mean, he's a nice enough guy, but like, he doesn't have a personality. So
doesn't have a personality.
There's nothing there for Andy to play off, so he's just going to insult him a lot, and the crowd popped for it.
They'll have to manage that a bit better.
The trouble is, in the ideal way to do it was for Marius to turn. And we talked about this at Tag League, and I said Marius is turning on him and he's joining Rise. And then when Andy turned, it was such a huge shock.
Yeah.
That it was, I think it's probably one of the best booked turns I've ever seen, because it was just so incredibly shocking. But then you look back at it and it's like, well, logically, was it the right thing to do? And I'm not convinced that it was. But it was a great moment. So you kind of win some, lose some.
I also have been enjoying the women's division run so far. Like, obviously, it's still very early going.
Someone was complaining on Twitter, I forget who it was, but they were complaining that Killer Kelly lost, like, in her first defense in, like, 6 minutes. And I'm like...
That was the story, though.
Yeah. Have you not been paying attention?
Yeah, I think WXW does reward paying attention to, like, just the little things that they do, like that fridge scene that got a bit memed, that one shotgun when
I didn't
Walter
understand
and CMJ.
What was going on. Ian had to explain it to me. I guess I'm just not in tune with the German sense of humor.
It was an odd one, but it was a good excuse to sort of show that everyone was upset with Kelly being a rookie champion, and they showed that by being hangry, basically. Yeah, I don't know. I've been enjoying that kind of stuff, that little stuff they've been hiding away in the shotguns, sort of referencing the larger story beats that they're doing. It's compelling.
It is a good show. It's just not always worth watching for the matches they put on.
Yeah, the matches are hit and miss. Sometimes, like, they did that freeway between James, Starr, and Simmons, which was really good and very important to the story they were doing there. But yeah, oftentimes I skip over the matches and just watch the segments.
Yeah, the segments are very key, though, so they do occasionally throw them into the like, there'll be a shotgun before a major event, and you'll get, like, a lot of the repeats, so you get, like, a highlights almost, so you can kind of drop into it, like, the Raw before a pay-per-view, and they'll show you all the stuff that's happened, so...
Well, the video packages and the match graphics, they're doing are way ahead of anything else on the indies, I think, because they have a full-time team doing it, rather than just the owners doing it themselves. So they're a little... more along as, like, a fully fledged company than a Progress or a RevPro, which haven't been around for as long. So, you know, that we're operating on different levels, but it's very impressive what they are doing and making it feel like such a professional package.
Yeah, definitely. We talked about that before, like how good their production values are and how much effort and money they put into them. And it really does show. Really excited for Carrot, though.
They're on a good run.
They've built a lot of storylines going into it, and if some of it pays off, it's going to be great. If all of it pays off, then we could be in for, like, an all-time weekend.
And obviously we haven't talked about it yet, because we didn't do any shows in December when they had the anniversary show. But Ilya Dragunov is, his sort of retirement or sabbatical, or he hasn't wrestled since. They put a thank you Ilya graphic up at the end of that show. It's something hanging over the promotion, and you don't know whether they're going to pay it off or not. Is he going to be coming back at Carrot or even later? But it's something to keep an eye out for, because I don't think he's retired. They probably would have explicitly said so.
Yeah, they would have done more with it if that was the case. He's got a newborn child. He doesn't have a lot of time off work, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him, but it's not something that is going to be permanent.
Yeah, but I like that he's
probably quite, like, banged up, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of a Brock Lesnar thing. Him not being around makes him more interesting. When Poochie isn't on screen, everyone should be asking, "Where's Poochie?" That's what you get at a Brit restaurant table. Simpsons references by the bucket load.
We've got two other things we need to talk about. One that I specifically want to talk about, and one that Rob wants to talk about. So, which do you want to do first?
Should we do Rob's interest in the Oceania scene?
Yeah, he wants us to talk about the amount of Australians that are currently active in the UK and that Progress is now going to be running a show in Australia as well. There seems to be a bit of a talent exchange thing going on. We've seen some very interesting guys come over. Aussie Open have been a huge success. Adam Brooks, I think, has done very well for himself. He's had a couple of very strong matches. And I love the angle that he did in Rev Pro where he cut the Australian flag off Will Ospreay's gear.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
That was brilliant. We've also had Charlie Evans over here. She's less experienced than the likes of Brooks and Davis. I think she's done fine. But there are going to be more. This is something that's going to happen ongoing now.
We never got the Will Ospreay living in Australia scenario.
It's not going to happen.
That may have been a work. but yeah, we're getting Jonah Rock over very, very soon. And he's in 16 carat. So, you know, the possibilities are endless for, as you say, Adam Brooks currently in here. And I don't even know when this started, really. But it's kind of snuck up on us. But there are just so many guys from Australia and New Zealand now making a living here.
There are more because I saw an Australian guy at Strong Style, and we were talking to, I don't know if you were there, I was talking to Tim Terese.
Yeah.
And he goes, like, that's an Australian guy over there. I can't remember what he's...
That's Joey Axel, right? From Five Star Wrestling fame.
I wouldn't know, I don't watch Five Star Wrestling.
Big Mohawk, man.
Watch everything else.
But yeah. He's been here for, I think, on and off for a couple of years. And obviously, South Pacific
like
Power
Patient
Trip.
Zero. Who was like the first person to come over? Was it? Would it have been TK and like?
Was it TK and Travis?
Travis came over after, didn't he?
Yeah.
TK
it may well have been TK and Dahlia, but it's just exploded since then, and it's the done thing now that. You come over here and you're part of BritRest almost immediately. Like, the way Aussie Open made their impact, it was just like, it was about 9 or 10 months ago, and just that whole month they were just killing it. They had the singles match in Flight Club Pro, they had the tag team championship win in Attack, and they were just immediately established on the scene. And it the way they can ingratiate themselves is pretty amazing. And there's no misses apart from Sean Custom.
Yeah.
He didn't quite ingratiate himself as integrate himself.
He was okay, I guess. But until you mentioned him, I had forgotten that he came over.
Well, I guess that's a good thing, though. The misses haven't been complete bombs and all the hits have been great successes. So this talent exchange thing we've got going on, it's been very worthwhile so far. And now Progress are going over to Oceania. Running a third continent in a year.
I think I just fancied a holiday, to be honest. It will be interesting to see who gets featured on those shows, because there is a lot of talent in Australia.
Yeah, we saw the Slex versus Okada match. There's clearly more just below the surface. You know, New Japan sites trying to get into Oceania. So it's going to be sort of another proxy war between the global powers of New Japan and WWE once again, but except instead of Britain, it's going to be in Australia and New Zealand. So it kind of is something relevant for us to keep track of. Obviously, maybe there should be a Oceanian podcast specifically, but you know, we're kind of twinned with that region. You know, the whole Will Ospreay run last year. You know, so many of their guys over here. So we'll definitely keep track of how those shows go. And obviously Progress running there is relevant to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a distant cousin. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was Will Ospreay and his January.
Yeah.
And what an insanely good January he's had. Started off at Wrestle Kingdom, had that four-way. And days later, he was at the other dome in Tufnell Park selling merch. But then, like, he had that match with Adam Brooks at Chapter 61. He had a great match with Dick Riley in Pro Wrestling Chaos.
Oh, wow. That's out of the blue.
I'd check it out. If you've got Powerbomb TV, it's on there. If you don't, you can't see it unless you've got I'm sure Pro Wrestling Castle have their own VOD thing as well, but yeah, that was really good. He had a cracking match with Wild Boar in Attack. That is genuinely on my match of the year list.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I did see you reviewed it very highly.
Yes, so. Great match. Wild Boar's way underrated, but yeah, another tremendous match from Will Ospreay, and he just had that Hiromu Takahashi match at New Beginning. I thought that was great as well.
And the cat was exceptional.
So yeah, like, he's been insanely good, and we were talking about him at the Britties, saying that like he is at the moment the premier British wrestler in the world.
I'd say so, yeah. Obviously there's ZSJ, but Ospreay's just sheer output is beating him.
It's crazy. And the fact that he's come back to the UK in January and just had all these great matches.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that what kind of a year is he going to have? Like, when we get to the end of the year, is he going to have racked up the kind of year that Okada had in 2017? Because it's entirely possible. He's not yet peaked. Which is
it's very exciting to see what he can do next. Obviously, he's in a great position in New Japan to have great matches, and whenever he comes over here, he feels like a huge star. He gets put in big time spots, even if he's not a regular. Yeah, the things that he can do this year are limitless, really, as long as he can stay healthy, stay happy, and keep up this kind of schedule. It's going to be excellent for him.
I think he needs to pick his spots. He's always been a guy that will go out there and just bust his ass in every match, and he doesn't need to do that. He's world famous. He doesn't need to kill himself in Bristol anymore.
His spot is not running a wrestling promotion. I think we can both agree.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But
British Puro,
Oh, dear.
Frontline,
wasn't it? Frontline Puro.
But copy-pasting the Wikipedia definition.
I'm trying to be nice.
That was amazing. Yeah, I mean, in ring, he's just been incredible, and like, he keeps banging it out, and this is why he's a three-time Britty Award winner. The most prestigious part of his career
easily. So before we go, I got a question for you.
Yes.
And I started thinking about this earlier on when I was kind of putting together a few notes for the show, and I was like, we've just started a new year. Which import would you most like to see in British wrestling in 2018?
Ooh, it's a toughie to hit me straight out the gate with that.
Yeah, completely out of the blue. I just want your gut reaction to it.
Well, he's already announced, so I don't know if it counts, but Jonah Rock does fascinate me, and I'm very hyped to see him. But someone just completely out of left field, I don't know. I mean, I've always been on the Taka Michinoku train, and I want to see him live before he retires. And that's my secret Suzuki-gun want. That's why I want this Suzuki-gun thing to happen for Refro. But then he also runs the K-Dojo, so I don't know if he'd have any free time. If you can get a date, then bring him over, Randy Q. That's my sincere wish for the new year.
I missed out on Kento Miyahara because he was in Swindon.
Swindon. Who goes to Swindon?
If someone could book him, that would be great. Dick Togo.
Oh yeah.
Love him to come over.
And
again.
He isn't injured
he's
anymore.
He's fucking Swindon as well. Also, Dragon Lee. If someone could book Dragon Lee, that would be lovely. I'd
need definitely.
Some flips in my life. And also, Mayu Iwatani and Tam Nakano. I'd love somebody to come and book them as a tag team. Fight Club Pro. Well, book them as a tag team, Fight Club Pro. Against like.
Well, we've got 10 months to make your dreams come true. Yeah. So
let's see what happens. I think that's a pretty reasonable wish list.
Yeah, we haven't gone, overboard. We haven't asked for Kenta Kobashi to get in a time machine.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it.
That is it. Do we want to plug things?
Hey, go ahead.
Oh, well, you can follow me on Twitter at Another Ollie. You can listen to British Audio Wrestling at the new home of Post Wrestling. You can read my Euro notes in F4W every week. Arn?
You can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious. You can also catch all my reviews, apart from the ones that are on Voices of Wrestling, over at rearviewreviews.com. I have written an insane amount of reviews this year.
Yeah. Your output is insane. You're the Will Ospreay of the reviewing world. And I don't mean that as a slight against your character.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And with that, we are done. So we will see you in 2 weeks' time.